typically, as we talk to organizations, pretty much every time the data team will say something along the lines of, hey, you know, we see Coalesce is objectively a better framework than what we're using today, but what are we going to do about the 10 years of Informatica code that we have lying around? Or what about the 3,000 objects that was written by some consultancy over the course of the past 5 years, who's now gone, and we have a ton of difficulty even comprehending what's been built and how it's been built. And so could you share a little bit more about what is unique about Datafold instead of using something like Claude or OpenAI when it comes to migrating that code from, say, like a SQL server to Snowflake instance? Like, what is it? What are you doing differently? Or why should somebody use Datafold instead of trying to go down that path?
I'm Armon Petrosian, the CEO of Coalesce, and this is The Data Tea, our monthly podcast on the news, trends, and technology transforming data today.
Welcome, everybody. We'll get started right away. I couldn't be more excited to have you on, Gleb, a close friend of mine and also another amazing founder in the data space. This is obviously The Data Tea. I'm Armon Petrosian, CEO and co-founder of Coalesce. It's just me today. Usually Satish is here with me, but he's out right now. So it's just us two. You're stuck with me. Gleb, would love for you to do a quick introduction on yourself and the company, and then we can jump into some questions.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Armon. Super excited. It's been great to see all the traction of Coalesce and what you've been building in the data space. I'm Gleb, CEO and co-founder of Datafold. We automate data engineering workflows. So we work with modern data stack technologies like warehouses and transformation frameworks like Coalesce to help automate the manual work that goes and falls through the cracks of the modern data stack, including data platform migrations, of course, which is one of the most gnarliest and tedious parts of the workflow. And super quick background on me, I've been working on Datafold for about 5 years now. Prior to starting Datafold, I was a data engineer, data PM, data scientist for my entire career. So wrote a lot of SQL, broke a lot of data pipelines, and get a chance to build three data platforms from pretty much from scratch. One was at Autodesk, which is a computer-aided design company. One was at Lyft, where I joined during the hyper growth phase and was probably data person number 10. And by the time I left, the team was about 300 people. And at Lyft specifically, I led a massive migration from Redshift to Hive. Don't ask me why, why Hive, but it was an absolute behemoth of a project. I was looking for the appropriate wording. I'm not sure what's the age rating.
You wanted to use.
Yeah. But as an architect of this migration, I made a lot of mistakes in terms of how we approach this and how I approach that. And we can talk about those. And also, we just lacked tooling to automate things. And it took us over 4 years. Unfortunately, given that Lyft actually is a digital native company, which is very interesting, it just speaks to how hard that problem is. So I'm very excited to talk about this topic and do good justice to it.
I can't wait. It's one of my favorite topics. When we were behind the scenes, the marketing person on our side, Alex, was like, this is Armon's favorite topic. So migrations are something that have been insanely painful. They've been a burden. It's been an opportunity cost for companies. It's never fun. I don't think I've ever spoken to somebody who was like, yeah, loved the migration effort. Like, that was a great time. Had a really enjoyable experience migrating from SQL Server to Snowflake or Teradata Databricks, whatever. So it's an awesome focus for Datafold, Gleb. It's something that I'm personally really invested in, really excited about to talk to you about. Can you, just before we do jump into migrations in particular, is there anything else like that you can share on when you decided to go from Lyft to start your own company in the first place? Because usually there is a lot of conviction that's necessary there. There's some forcing function where you as a founder had to make a decision that was, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to walk away from a high paying job and I'm going to go pursue this for some reason. What was that trigger point like for you? At what point did you say, screw it, I'm going for it?
Yeah, that's a great question, Armon. So it was interesting because Lyft is in an incredibly data-driven business. I don't think there are that many businesses out there that are like quite like ride-sharing. Uber is the same, a larger scale somewhat, but you basically have to balance two-sided market in every city you operate, in every zip code you operate in real time. And you are worried, you're working on very thin margins and you allocate millions, tens of millions of dollars in incentives to passengers and drivers. And so the entire company ran on data, on experiments, on A-B testing, on dashboards, machine learning. And it was really, really interesting to see. And that was a big excitement for me joining Lyft, is just seeing how really valuable and critical is data to the business. And at the same time, what was surprising is how difficult it was for us to do basic things. Like, you want to do some really deep inside analysis of driver behavior and like what motivates drivers to actually go and drive and what kind of incentives and kind of bonuses you can create. And so you want to do some basic reporting and create some reports to understand like how much time every driver in the region contributes to going on the app and drive. And shipping something like that took like weeks. And the challenge wasn't necessarily writing SQL that anyone can learn pretty fast. It was all things around it. How you find the data, how do you test the work that you do, how do you kind of reconcile what you get with other sources of truth? How do you deal with infrastructure that's, you know, overloaded? And it was that realization kind of over again and culminating in me driving the migration, is that even a very advanced company, and I think Lyft had really, really good technology across the board with good infrastructure and great talent, you still can't really fully unlock the value of data because how much manual work exists in the data engineering workflow. And data engineering is really interesting because it kind of sits between the ultimate data consumers, which could be analysts who do reporting and then create insights for the business stakeholders in driving decisions, data scientists who are doing a lot of machine learning and experimentation, and they have their own stacks and they focus on particular problems. But the data engineering is all about how do I deliver the right type of data set to the right type of consumer on time with high quality. And that workflow sucked for pretty much my entire career across three companies. And after Lyft, I had a detour at a startup building remote control for autonomous vehicles. Also started as a kind of head of data there and build data platforms from scratch. And what was interesting, it was a 20-person company relative to Lyft at the time was a 4,000-person company, but we ran into exactly the same problems. It was just very hard to get the data insights, very hard to build things, very hard to ensure data quality. And kind of seeing that over and over again at companies of different stages made me realize, okay, I don't think it's a problem of a company or an industry or a stage. Yeah. We just need better tooling that help data engineers focus on the high value at work, as opposed to on all the little details like migrations or testing or reconciling data between different databases. And so we started Datapool with a thesis that we're not trying to do one thing. We try to create tools that help data engineers automate the workflows, the most tedious parts of them, and then through that, increase impact and help companies unlock the full value of data because of that.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you basically are scratching your own itch from what you experienced as a data team leader. And that's always a great way to have the exposure and the expertise to know what to build in the first place. And so it's awesome to see how the company's evolved over the course of the past few years. And it's been really great getting to know you on a personal level as well. I see a lot of passion in what you do. And obviously we share a similar vision on automation from data engineering use cases and helping developers be exponentially more productive compared to any other alternative as well. And it's cool to see some of our joint customers using both Datafold and Coalesce in real life. So it's an awesome story. I love it. And I know I mentioned earlier migrations are something that I love to talk about. And I think there's a huge potential in how AI can help assist it. And you've been on the forefront of that, you know, even from the point when we first met for dinner, I don't know how long ago it was, as you were making that the primary focus for Datafold. And so can you tell us a little bit about that? Like, What is it that is unique about how you want to approach making migrations suck less for customers? And like, what is it that got you to that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been building various tools for data engineers, and one of our most famous tools is called DataDiff. Essentially, it helps you compare data sets within databases or within database in the context of like dev versus prod for testing, or across databases, for example, your OLTP database source that you're streaming to Snowflake or Databricks, see if that reconciles. And we had lots of customers that adopted those use cases. And one use case that we always knew is like extremely painful is migrations. And what's interesting about that one is that if you improve data team's ability to, let's say, test or do beta code reviews or catch anomalies faster or sooner, that is incremental value that you can quantify in making, you know, X number of data engineers at the company, you know, Y percent more productive, which is great. And then for many companies, and for many our, you know, our customers, initial customers, it's great ROI. But migrations is a whole different beast, because to execute a data platform migration takes tens of thousands of hours, which you as a data team don't usually have internally available, because you already have a team that's fully allocated with quarter ahead roadmaps of building, you know, pipelines and dashboards and analysis. So you don't have that spare 30,000 hour capacity. So right. You end up bringing in external contractors, external talent, pay billable hours. And what ends up happening is that this is an incredibly manual process, because if we zoom out a little bit, like what migration actually is it's two parts. One is moving the data, which in this day and age is super easy. Even at billion row scales, you can bring in tools for moving data. There are many out there. You can do it in a week. But what's really hard is rewriting code, because data is portable. You download it from your old system, you put it into your new system, you set up ingest, you're good. But by the time you start the migration, you usually accumulate millions of lines of code in stored procedures and views and all sorts of legacy, you know, ETL, drag and drop tooling that cannot be ported over to a new stack. You have to completely rewrite them, and moving into a stack like, let's say, Snowflake and Coalesce requires not just translation of SQL into Snowflake, it requires completely reimagining how the data should work. And that is incredible amount of manual work if you just do it taking, you know, script by script.
Yep.
And for a while, we had customers who used our DataDiff technology for reconciling their migration. So they would actually embark on this very costly journey of rewriting their SQL code, and then they would use our tools to do final QA and user acceptance testing. And that worked actually pretty great. They saved a lot of time. But we always had this itch that how do we help them do the entire project, the entire thing? And the technology that everyone used for decades now to help migrate the code is essentially transpilers. So
yep.
There's been multiple companies started. There are some open source projects that exist for essentially taking SQL and then transpiling into different dialects. But the interesting thing is that technology is extremely expensive to develop, because you're essentially writing a multi-language compiler, and SQL is simple, but it also gets pretty complex, especially if you go into transactional stuff and stored procedures. And compilers are hard to develop. You have to develop grammars, and then it's kind of like all or nothing, because SQL query either compiles or doesn't. You can have like a 95%
right.
transpiled query. It's very hard. And what's even harder is that these days people don't run like SQL queries plainly, right? The reason why Coalesce is so successful is because you help customers take business logic that they want to express and ship that to production using your framework, your templating, your you know, configuration, and that goes hand with code. And none of the transpiling technologies support that, and to make them support that would take a lot of time. Right. Now, obviously, I'm saying all this, and everyone's probably like, okay, AI, LLMs, like, let's go. Yes. So we've been looking at LLMs for a few years now. But for a while, as we all know, they were quite bad at generating and understanding the code. And it's probably been around like a year and a half when we saw the kind of the third generation of GPT and Claude getting really good with code comprehension, code generation. And that allowed us to actually start working on agents that would take the entire migration code rewrite and start shipping that so that we could close the loop on not just helping testing, not just helping translation, but doing both within an agentic workflow. And as we started working with early customers, we saw that this generates amazing value for them because we're not giving them a tool that allows them to like click and drop and maybe translate some SQL, and then they have to package it into CoLS framework, and then they have to test it manually. We're just giving them a end-to-end solution. So if I'm an executive buyer, I'm a CFO, or I'm head of data, I just can massively accelerate my timeline, which also is great for us because that means that we can get a lot of customers quick, deliver a lot of value, and grow the business fast. That's kind of been the journey of getting to migrations.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one of the reason why it's one of my favorite topics is because typically as we talk to organizations, pretty much every time the data team will say something along the lines of, hey, you know, we see CoLS is objectively a better framework than what we're using today, but what are we going to do about the 10 years of Informatica code that we have lying around? Or what about the 3,000 objects that was written by some consultancy over the course of the past 5 years, who's now gone, and we have a ton of difficulty even comprehending what's been built and how it's been built. And so could you share a little bit more about what is unique about Datafold instead of using something like Claude or OpenAI when it comes to migrating that code from, say, like a SQL server to Snowflake instance? Like, what is it? What are you doing differently? Or why should somebody use Datafold instead of trying to go down that path?
That's a great question, Mamon. So there are a few things here. One, the tools like Cursor and Claude, they're really optimized for general purpose software engineering. That means that when they work on an existing code base, they help you build incremental new things, or sometimes actually vibe code completely new projects. But
sure,
they kind of drive your productivity as a developer. And as we know for AI, by 2025, the really key thing is context. Context is what makes LLMs actually very productive. And in the example of a data platform migration, there is a lot of context that those tools don't have access to. That includes what actually is in the data.
Yeah.
How do we test the migration? What is the best practice for a given platform? How do I ensure that the model doesn't hallucinate? And how do I make sure that when I convert a given stored procedure, I take into account the proper configuration of the larger project, you know, in CoLS and the setup of all the schemas and all the interdependencies? And if you actually try that, then you will find that the tool helps you write code, but you end up filling a lot of the gaps manually.
Yeah.
And that's just by design of that tool, right? It's meant to incrementally accelerate your workflow. And now if we try to extrapolate that to enterprise scale volumes and complexity, it's usually not 30 Informatica workflows. It's usually thousands. And what's more, it's kind of Informatica workflows driving shell scripts that drive Teradata BTech that drive stored procedures. So you have this massive code stack across different languages. And untangling that one by one as a human is extremely difficult. So you may at best get maybe 15 or 20% acceleration with AI. And then the other challenge is that if we talk about tools like Claude or Cursor, they are giving superpowers to a developer, but we still need developers to actually do the work, which means that for a project that requires migrating, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of, you know, views or data sets, we need to staff the project with a lot of developers, and you end up back in the same problem of you have humans doing the work, which is really not fun and is really difficult to do correctly. Then the approach we take is like, if you imagine the sort of developer with Cursor, it's like you want to wash dishes, and Cursor is like a really good soap and sponge, so you can wash faster and it's more fun. But ultimately, you still need people to wash the dishes. And the approach we took is reimagining the flow into how can we, instead of saying give people better tools to do the migration, build an agent that can do the migration for you and only loop in the person, the human, when the human judgment is required, but doing all the work itself. So it's kind of like a dishwasher. You can load all the dishes in,
yep.
And sometimes you will end up with like a, you know, wooden spatula that you can put in, and like, okay, maybe that's where human steps in. But other than that, you just put the code in and you get the code out. And that's like a very different paradigm that allows for much greater efficiency, much greater automation, much better price and timeline guarantee that we can actually provide to the end user.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also would expect if somebody were to go down the path of just using something like Claude or Cursor, that they're going to end up spending almost as much time just tweaking and fixing the code itself, like refining that logic and validating it, that it almost makes it not even worthwhile to try to take that approach, because it, you end up back in the same problem that you would have dealt with otherwise. Whereas for you, having the focus that you did with data diffs and data quality allows you to take that context and help accelerate it in a way that's actually meaningful for an organization. And so I think the approach makes a ton of sense. It's something that nobody enjoys doing when it comes to migrations. Being able to make that as simple as possible and as quick as possible is a huge pain point for pretty much any big company, and also lots of other companies that are taking on data engineering use cases in general. And so, it makes a lot of sense to me. As far as AI goes, how do you see the roles of data engineers and data architects evolve as AI helps people handle more of these tedious tasks efficiently?
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't really buy into the whole notion of AI is there to replace data engineers. I think that is extremely far from the reality. Agreed. Even as data agents become better, I think that AI is here to reshape the job in a good way, in terms of elevating the data engineer as a practitioner to a higher level of abstraction. Just like, you know, we can these days write SQL instead of Fortran, and we can use dashboards and frameworks like Coalesce as opposed to using stored procedures that are, I would say, far kind of like lower level, more moving pieces, harder to build, harder to maintain. AI is there to elevate the practitioner to focus on the core things. And so one of those is, how do we think strategically about what data we need as our organization? How do we create the right stack of technologies for our organization, for our needs? How do we think about using different vendors and their strengths and then kind of having them play together? And I would say that right now, data engineers are still very heavily involved in kind of constructing the business logic and creating data models, thinking about how the tables should be shaped. I think that as AI gets better and gets more context around the business and how the data is used, and I think that you have a lot of insights already into that with, you know, Coalesce and your new cataloging offer, because you can see kind of the end side of the consumption, that gives a lot of ability for AI agents to help build the models and build them in a way that's really well aligned with the business. I think that takes away a lot of this, like, okay, how should I name this column? What the definition should be? Right. What columns should be in the stable, right? Like that can be actually automated, but then it doesn't mean that data engineer has nothing to do. They still need to oversee this process, need to make sure that all the stack aligns, need to make sure that all the humans ultimately consuming this data are happy and their needs are met. But they, instead of writing every single line of SQL, could be guiding the agents with a much higher level of abstraction, potentially having, you know, human match language conversation with them, but not necessarily in a way like, hey, give me the revenue, but more like, how do we create the right data stack, the right pipelines for our business? So I think it's like actually going to be very interesting and very fun to be data engineer over the next 5 years, because you'll be able to get more done. It'll be like less tedious. You will spend fewer hours diving into rabbit holes of bugs, and you will be able to deliver much more impact to the business, which ultimately is great for you career wise, right? Like, no one really cares exec wise if you're like there debugging the SQL error for like 5 hours, but everyone wants to see great insights and data products that now we will be able to build more of with AI. That's a kind of a high level take, but we can go into like the technical bits as well.
No, I agree with it. I think the future I see is an ability for non-technical users to be able to call agents to go and actually build out a lot of the objects associated with populating any dashboard that they might be trying to build that doesn't exist yet. But it's not going to be perfect. We know that no matter what, it's not going to be the right level of data quality. It's not going to be able to run perfectly. So you still need a highly specialized data team to go in and refine that logic and validate it and make sure that it gets shipped properly. But the whole workflow should be a lot more autonomous and actually should be a lot more engaging with the consumers of data, because they should be able to have a faster turnaround time on anything that they request. And so we're seeing that firsthand as you go through having a catalog that interacts with non-technical users, as well as a development framework to automate the construction and maintenance of those objects. But it's still at the very beginning. Like that's still something that's happening in real time, similar to how you've approached migrations. I think that you see that light at the end of the tunnel because you're dealing with this day to day. You see it getting better and better as you go. And so by no means do I expect data engineers to go away anytime soon. If anything, good data engineers should be increasingly more valuable in the future. And the value that people get out of data in the first place should grow exponentially just because the projects are able to be done in such a shorter span of time than they ever were historically.
Totally. And I would say that I am super optimistic about AI impact on data engineering, but there's also a caveat that it's not like everyone for granted will be elevated in terms of their impact and kind of quality of life. I think the disparity between the data teams and specific data engineers who master the use of AI and also create the right data stack for themselves and for their teams, and those who don't and like really lag behind in adoption, would be enormously big over the next few years. Like if you are still stuck on old tools like ETL and kind of old school 20, 30 year technology versus if you're shipping on, you know, Qualys plus Snowflake, that could easily be 10, 20 times difference in like your velocity, your amount of impact on the organization, and ultimately your career as well. So I think that's something that really important to keep in mind for folks in terms of how they shape their career and what decisions they make day to day.
Yeah, that makes sense. What do you think migrations are going to look like in the future if you fast forward 2 years from now? Like, do you feel like it's just going to be something that's completely done behind the scenes, Dataful takes care of it, and it's completely autonomous? Or at least maybe to what degree of effort will the data team need to spend on them, on migrations in general, in a year's time or 2 years time or 3 years time?
Yeah, that's a great question. My thinking on this changes quite a bit as we go. Yeah. What's really cool is that our current Dataful's current technology allows data team to do a migration from a legacy stack to a modern stack pretty much without lifting a finger in terms of the code. So they give us all the legacy code. We rewrite it. We test it. We give them back, let's say, a Qualys project with all the schemas defined, all the configuration done, you know, in Snowflake or another warehouse. And that's pretty much the work done. Now, they still need to set up the ingest into the new warehouse, right? Repoint their ingest pipelines into the new warehouse and set up permissions. But that's usually the easy part. But I think that there are certain important caveats in terms of that process and what is still hard. Like, currently, we do migrations only in a lift and shift manner, which means that we can be rewriting all the implementation code. Like if there was a store procedure with a for loop statement and a bunch of ifs, we would probably not carry this over to, you know, Qualys and Snowflake. We would rewrite it to be something much simpler, but providing the same output, right? So you get the same table, but now it's just way better code, way faster, way more maintainable. But also, I think where the migrations go is that data teams often want to deal with a lot of technical debt around their data model, because once you start the migration, you see like there's so much duplication out there, so many different sources of truth. And that's not something we can do right now in terms of how do we help build a better model data model for users that will actually require like changing the shape of tables and like maybe merging some of the business logic into a single place, right? That ultimately would give a much more maintainable code base, because that requires a lot of context around the business that we currently don't ingest. But I think that's something that as our agent become better, as we get better in terms of ingesting kind of context from tools like, you know, Coalesce, we will be able to help with as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's always been fascinating to me to see companies migrate from whatever large scale on-premise system they have into the cloud, and taking the lift and shift approach when they know that they're not super content with what's built on the on-premise platform versus being able to redesign some of those components. And I think that's just it feels like a necessary evil for some companies, like just to get off of whatever they're using as quickly as possible, they're going to neglect the opportunity to refactor and redesign some of that previous implementation to be optimized for the future. And I think that what you're solving should, in theory, help them actually be more thoughtful about migrations, given that they're going to buy back some time, they're going to buy back some energy to be more thoughtful in what the future looks like from that migration. So,
yeah. But until then, I still believe that lift and shift is the best approach, because what you want to do, the last thing you want to do is try to like redesign everything and seek consensus in your organization and have the project take years.
Yeah.
You should get over to a new platform as soon as possible. And then you will have all time in the world to redesign your Coalesce data model, because your developer productivity would be like 20 times better. So at that time, you can safely do it.
That's the
best approach to migrations.
That makes sense. The only time I would suggest otherwise is if there's like a specific portion that makes sense to go live first that needs to be redefined or reworked. But otherwise, I agree. It makes a ton of sense. Any other predictions on how AI is going to reshape data infrastructure or data engineering workflows? This could be broader, of course, than just migration.
Yeah. I would say there's everyone kind of dreams of the holy grail of data, at least in terms of BI, where users just ask natural language questions and they get amazing insights. And getting insights is like not hard. You can get this all day long. It's your question is like, what's your confidence that those are the right kind of insights in the right context for your role and for the question you're asking for your business, which is extremely hard. And I think that between the sort of ultimate self-serve and the state where now there's a lot of room to introduce AI into your workflow with tools and things like MCP. Like, for example, just having the ability to use, give any AI agent that you use, like be that Claude Code or Cursor or, Codex, the ability to interact with your data stack, run queries, Coalesce models and jobs goes a super long way and can really improve your user experience, developer experience, but that requires a little bit of tinkering. It's not like it's necessarily like set for you. You have to kind of find your way into it and experiment. And what I found is also a lot of times with AI, some people are like really eager to try and they just go and try things. Some are skeptics. And if you approach your AI experimentation with the mindset like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. And if it doesn't give me the perfect answer, like I told you, it's not great, right? Of course, it's not going to work. Like you just got to be frustrated and you will sort of reinforce your bias. But what I found personally is that, yes, it's not perfect, but if you keep pushing AI in terms of what you want it to do, you'll be surprised every time you push it further. And then sometimes it will like grossly underperform. Like sometimes I had, a Claude Code run a couple of queries, get results that are like 1,000 times different and say like, oh, it's actually identical. And I'm like, what? And then at the same time, it helped our team like debug issues that could easily take like a couple of days in about 20 minutes just by being able to interact with in our Snowflake environment. So that's really, I think, is the state we're in, is the state of adventure. And so I encourage everyone to try to build your own tools and definitely try everything that Armand and the team are putting out in terms of AI tooling. It's not going to be perfect, but it's definitely going to give superpowers, but you have to lean into them and give them a chance and see how they fit in your workflow. So I think that's like curiosity and trying to improve things is going to go a long way.
Yeah, that's awesome. What last couple questions I got for you. We always do annual predictions for the upcoming year. And it's kind of funny, like we were looking at the predictions for 2025 that we did in 2024. And it was all things that came true pretty much. And so I'm curious from your perspective, any specific predictions that you're looking forward to in 2026 that you feel like are inevitable for the data and AI space?
Well, I think that a couple things come to mind, but I'm also curious what dimensions you want to push this into. But if we take kind of the tech stack,
yeah.
I think this year there's been this idea that like modern data stack is not the thing because we are already on modern data stack. Like everyone is modern, so sort of like why call it modern?
Sure.
And that I think Tristan from BBT kind of put out as an opinion, and I think that it's partly true, especially in certain segments of the market, like you know, digital natives I think are running like really well. But if you go to like Fortune 500 enterprise companies, I would say in my experience, 90% of their workflows are running on super scary, super slow infrastructure, and there's so much room for them to get like what we take for granted as startups right
for sure.
And I think that's just kind of an invisible iceberg because we don't really hear a lot from those teams or maybe even see them, but the scale of that massive modernization that about to happen is enormous. And I think that the other thing I'll say is we used to think about kind of data stack as its own thing. Okay, we have warehouse, we have a orchestration kind of data intelligence framework on top, right? Then we have BI tools, and then we have other things like ingest. But now, because of the AI and because how data hungry the AI is to build applications, you kind of need to bring a lot of things together. And so I think that the boundary of the data stack is going to be far more fuzzy. And we're already seeing this with Databricks pushing super aggressively into AI and into agent building and into transactional databases, and Snowflake pushing super aggressively as well. And some of them have like their own strengths, but it's very clear that enterprise buyers, enterprise teams want to think much larger when they think data these days than just like, I'm going to run a bunch of analytical queries. Right. And I think that's also quite interesting for us as kind of smaller players in the space is because we also are now will have to think broader than just analytical tables, right? We have to think about how our customers are going to be building agents and what it means in terms of the pipelines they're creating and how the data flows in and out. And I think that creates a lot of mess, but it's also great because now people will be able to do more with data. So a couple of predictions there.
Yeah. Fair enough. I do agree with you. I mean, I think we can get carried away thinking that everybody's on a modern data stack, but in reality, you go look at any Fortune 1000 global company and the majority of their workloads are still on-premise today, even though they do have adoption of cloud data warehouses and they want to move there. Like even the most cutting edge Fortune 500 customers of ours are still moving off of Oracle. They're still moving off of SAP. They're still moving off of Teradata. And so it's still a big problem for people to solve as they look forward into the future. Is there any closing thoughts or advice for the audience, Gleb, from your perspective? You've had a great career, you started a company, you've found a really nice niche here with migrations, but you've been through a lot. Anything that you'd like to share as closing thoughts here?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. Just reflecting on my journey, I actually come from a non-technical background and I studied economics in college, and then I learned computer science through an online course from Harvard called CS50. And then I got into grad school for computer science and kind of started the tech career from there. But until then, I kind of like didn't really know what a function is. So I would say, coming from this non-technical to technical background, was really a moment of like getting superpowers. And I think these days it's even more important for all practitioners. Like, you know SQL, it's great. You're a data engineer, you know a little bit of Python, that's great.
Right.
I think if you master programming, invest in understanding how to build AI, that will give you 10x superpowers as well, because of how powerful that technology is. And you will not necessarily always build things for yourself, but you will have a really good intuition for how to integrate the best AI tools into your workflow, into your company, and you will be able to make a ton of impact. And the other thing I'll say is, the success of my career to date pretty much all amounted to my kind of like laziness and dissatisfaction with my workflow. I just really hated how slow I was and how much time I spent on what I thought were mundane things. And I started building tools first for myself and then for my colleagues and then eventually for customers. And I think that now, again, because of AI and because the difference in productivity in like the stack that, let's say, like Cobalt and Snowflake gives you versus the legacy like ETL tooling, that gives even more reason to constantly question, am I doing the right thing? Am I having the right tools, the right workflow? Is my team using the best tooling? And then teams like Coalesce are shipping super fast. They're adding new functionality. They're acquiring companies and adding use cases. And like, okay, you are on Coalesce today. Great. Now you want to take full advantage of their features because they are going to be shipping a lot of AI things and are shipping a lot of AI things. And you have to try and really give it a push. And if you just stuck with your, like, whatever you've been doing for the last 3 years, I think you'll quickly find yourself far less competitive and less impactful. So these are my parting thoughts. So quote the great, stay hungry and stay curious, I would say.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's been great having you on, Gleb. It's always a pleasure connecting with you, both on this as well as just in general. And this was a really fun conversation. So hopefully everybody enjoys it as much as I did.
Yeah, thanks so much, Herman.
Cool, thanks, Gleb.